Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
And welcome to the Deep Dive. Andy and I here today to celebrate, question mark, the end of the prohibition on the federal prohibition on gambling. We can finally bet on sports.
I was talking about Jerusalem.
Okay. That's a different celebration.
We can talk about PASPA too. I didn't realize how long ago this was put into place. It was nice.
I had no idea either.
Reading an article or two, 1992, man. I was in second grade, I think. I don't know.
Do you know anything about the history of this? Gambling wasn't really actually legal or whatever before that, was it? Why did they even bother doing this?
I think it was just more of a bill that they introduced to kind of reinforce the fact that they decided. And it was crazy. I didn't look into what kind of control there was as far as Congress back then. But you know what's funny? This was 1992. And we'll come back to Mr. Hatch from Utah, but Orrin Hatch was one of the original authors of the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, supposed to make sure that the integrity of sports was protected against the degenerates of the world. And maybe this was right after Pete Rose, or I don't know. But
it's all so misguided. I just don't understand.
Well, it's just federal, and without giving away some of my politics here, but federal, there are spots where you definitely need the federal government to step in and make some decisions, but this is just federal overreach at its finest, and that's what they decide. And Rappaport's tweet said the vote was 7-2, but I'm seeing 6-3 everywhere, so I think he was wrong, because I'm showing Notorious RBG, Sotomayor, and Breyer dissenting. Which, still 6-3, that passes. 5-4 passes. But they just said,
fascinating that the conservative side, the small government conservative side of the source of the court threw this law out. Interesting. Well, Orrin Hatch can get bent. That guy sucks.
He's retiring too, and he's going to introduce legislation to try to fix this. He said pretty much wants to write a new PASPA, which hopefully the precedent set by the Supreme Court will keep Congress in line on that. There's nothing more important than this, so hopefully Congress spends their time on this.
of course. They will. It's so ridiculous. Some of my politics on this, I guess, are just I don't even want to get into politics, but just what the heck? None of this makes, none of the existing system makes any sense.
Throw out your political leanings and just common sense says, maybe if there were huge issues, which, way back, let's go Black Sox scandal.
Yeah, Black Sox.
Those guys were getting paid 35 cents in a Frankfurter to go play ball. They were easily bought off. And, just today with, technology and how, to sound scary, just the fact that there's so much, tracking on everything you do and text, you can go dig up people's texts and emails and stuff. It's going to be hard to get away with bribing someone to throw a game. And it would be just painfully obvious. Way back in the day, shit was done on chalkboards. Nowadays, we go to tennis and we talk about tennis a lot. They monitor that. They can look for crazy ass, betting patterns. Everybody pounded this one guy. He was a huge underdog, and miraculously, the favorite really, really had a bad day. That stuff's going to get snuffed out pretty early if there's anything like that at all. It's not the 1920s. It's not that easy to – you can't buy off a player. These guys make too much.
Yes, absolutely. The financial incentives aren't there. You're absolutely right. And we didn't really talk about the tennis – when tennis made news about match fixing a couple weeks ago, All of that was just so ridiculous. They spent so much money on something we could have told them in 5 minutes of sitting down with like the people who care about this stuff. Like all of it was absolute common sense. And yes,
they spent a ton of money on that study.
It was so terrible. Yeah, and it's like, and you know, like my, I guess my general thoughts are like professional sports. The more highly paid the athletes are, the less the incentive is for there to be any impropriety. And like NBA players and, you know, any, you know, and I guess like the easiest sports to fix are definitely tennis because it's one versus one. And the easiest, you know, way to, you know, there is multiple ways to fix games, but literally like there's the financial incentives that just aren't there. Like you're much more incentivized to do well at your job than you would ever be to throw some game to make some small amount of money. And like, you know, you trickle that down into, okay, well, the people in the tennis circuit who are trying to make a name for themselves, who aren't making any money, like, are there going to be incentives for those guys? Absolutely. Right. And like and same with college and
quote unquote amateur sports
and, you know, college sports. Yeah. Like, yeah, if they're not getting paid for their work, yeah, there's scandals have happened.
People don't follow tennis, Leslie, though, you know? There's stories. They're on the lower levels of tennis, there's stories. God, what was that article?
And it's the Wild West, man.
Quote from a guy. He said he lost a match. Someone, I don't know if this was a specific example, but they said, like, people have lost matches on purpose. On a very low level, because the extra prize money they would have got to advance would have been less than it would have cost for like the ticket change fees, because they didn't expect to go that far and they already had their ticket booked for the next place. You know, they said it would have cost me more to switch a plane and hotel than it would have to, you know, to just lose the match and not get that extra prize money. You know, when the prize money isn't there, there can be some impropriety. And it's funny that you just brought up the NBA as far as not being able to, you know, get to a player. You know, these max contracts are ridiculous. They're making, you know, $25-30 million a year. There's a lot of cash. It's funny that we're talking about that, but then we've been talking about Scott Foster all day.
Like that, well, it's okay. That is the part. Yeah.
They won't need to monitor. So. That's the part, like, that's on the leagues to monitor that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and they've done a bad job of that. I get that.
If there's something that happens like that, yeah, you know, I like integrity and all, but if there's something funny that goes on like that and I know about it and I'm on the right side, that's kind of fun too.
I'm fine with that too. But here's the other thing. Okay, so yes, the refereeing in the NBA is obviously a weak spot, but like, there's no amount of, I don't know, like the idea of an integrity fee that the leagues will charge, like that's laughable. Like, dude, get the fuck out of here. Like, and then the idea that like, you know, everyone now has sticky fingers and juice is going to be -115, -120. It's like, okay, then none of this will ever succeed long term. You're just going to get short term people who come in, get cleaned out, and then are like, this is stupid, I quit. Yeah, I mean, like,
whatever the break even rate is at -120, I mean,
yeah, it's just going to clean people out.
Yeah, for the people, if someone isn't betting already, like they have not found a way to bet through a local or through an offshore, I mean, let's just make a real generalized statement and say they're probably not going to be very good at it. If they haven't found a way to bet, they probably haven't been handicapping at any point. And they're probably going to be bad. And at -115, -120, they're not going to be interested in just losing money that fast. I don't think. Maybe, you know, they'll be. I just feel like if someone was degenerate enough that they want to gamble, they're already gambling. So this is just
going of to course.
Be people that, you know, that this is going to be recreational people that didn't have a chance to before think it might be fun and novel way to, you know, maybe some people that have been doing DFS and want to get into this, but. Yeah, I think that whole -115, -120 shit. Honestly, yeah. I think I listened to, I want to say it was a Business of Betting podcast.
Sure.
I can't think of that guy's name.
Yeah, Jake. Jake Williams.
I think it was that one. He was just. It had nothing to do with this, but they got talking about it. He interviewed someone, and it was an Australian guy, or British. I don't know. Either way, he was in Australia, and he talked about this. They went through this process down there, and it wasn't long before these big corporate books. I mean, they were ready, like Paddy Power and. I'm trying to think of the big European ones.
That 365 and
that 365 Patty. I mean, all those big European
Betfair.
Exactly. The exchanges, the big books. They're ready. They want in on this. I mean, look at the population of the U.S. compared to the, you know, I guess I don't know what it is compared to all of Europe, but just take like England, for instance. America has more people.
Yes.
I'm gonna firmly stand by that. Like if Paddy Power can hit that market, they're very excited.
And more sports.
And they don't need to. They don't need to be charging -120 on just regular lines. In fact, they're great. They have promos and all kinds of stuff. It'll be better than the offshores, better than the locals if you can get some of those big corporate books in. They have all kinds of fun stuff. We have Canadian friends that and like the thing where the one sports book, I think it's 365, or if you bet a money line in baseball and they get up by more than 4 runs, they just cash it for them.
It's such a cool move.
There's silly things like that, and they have that for most of the sports. If you play enough, they'll give you some of those fun incentives. And so I think it's going to go the opposite direction if we can get some of those well-established, good European large corporate sports books in here.
Okay, so let's break down then. I completely agree with you. And I wanted to kind of break down some of the winners and losers here. But before we do that, I just got to kind of lay out, like, this could be done right, and it could be done well, and could make this better for all of us, right? Like, we are talking about now opening up what was a relatively restrictive marketplace, right? Like, people were sketched out, like, having to put their credit card into an offshore book and not ever knowing if they were ever going to get their money back, right? Like, people were sketched. Yeah.
Call you right. Would be like, hey, why did you put $1,000 into something from China?
Right, and people were sketched out, like, trying to use cryptocurrency to do this because they were like, this is too complicated, I don't want to deal with this. People were sketched out, like, dealing with a local bookie because there's all kinds of legal questions surrounding that sort of activity. I mean, anyone who's making book is breaking the law. And so without a doubt, like, there's all kinds of, like, people who would otherwise be participating that had not to this point just because of the perceived – you know, legal situation, right? This now introduces all of this, you know, new potential bettors who, you know, people who, you know, at least when starting out are going to be relatively uninformed. And you're right, there are probably going to be a lot of soft money among this group of people. It'll eventually kind of weed itself out. Like, either like more people will take up handicapping as a hobby, or like, they will burn out quickly and be like, this is dumb, like, I hate this, I don't want, you know, or, you know, and but in the short term, at least, almost certainly, you're going to have this enormous influx of the kind of the total market cap, right? Like, the handle on any given major sports event is going to be much, much larger in the United States, right?
I wonder about that. You know, they say every year with the Super Bowl, here's how much is bet on the Super Bowl, and then they say here's how much is bet legally. Like, those numbers, those are, you know, Revel and those guys. Everyone's going to put that tweet out every year. It'll be interesting
to
see.
Of course,
there's some places that are going to be taking, that Monmouth Park out in Jersey. Like, that book's built. I guess they're saying, like, a couple weeks that they're going to rock that, because, like,
incredible.
There's a few states that have already passed this.
NBA Finals, come to Monmouth, New Jersey, and get your action.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Like, I think there's actually 5 states that are already good to go. They were just waiting for the federal ban to be overturned, and, you know, they've already passed their law, but they just needed the federal ban to be lifted to make that go into effect. And so, I mean, there could be some betting, you know, outside of the normal, just your Las Vegas betting. I want to say Jersey, West Virginia, a couple other ones. Like, that shit can happen soon.
So presumably, if this is done right, and they have kind of large corporations swoop in and set up multi-state, you know, markets, and these markets are much more liquid than the current markets, right? And you know, you're effectively should see, you know, lines get more efficient. You should see people being able to there will be a good, like a pinnacle type of book should manifest in the United States, where you have relatively low hold and you have extremely competitive prices, and that opportunity sounds good to me, as opposed to like what you hear a lot of these people postulating, like, well, everyone's got sticky fingers, so GFX is going to be 120. Like, in my mind, at least, done right, it should be the opposite, right? Like, you should have, okay, well, this is a much bigger handle now, and, you know, we can kind of compensate everybody fairly and even help the customers, right? Like, but you know that's not how it'll
work. Yeah, if it's just, wrong, look at the record. You know, look at Las Vegas's record as far as, you know, you see those tweets come out like, this is the, you know, 70th month in a row or whatever that Las Vegas sportsbooks have made money. Obviously, the model works. It's not as good as slots. They want you to come out and play slots. That's the best. But, you know, they make money at it. It works. Obviously, the big corporate ones do it right, where they're... I mean, what do you call the guys? Not just the odds makers, but the risk managers, everybody. They know what they're doing to move and set the markets where they make money. And they don't need to go nuts with it, like you'd said. Like, they can do, even like we talked about with the promos. Like, those are well enough run companies where they can really cater to these customers and still make money on their end.
I hope
it's going to go that way. It sounds like it's going to go that way. Just thinking today over that, you know, like I said, that podcast I'd listened to about, I kind of want to dive into that a little, look into how things went in Australia. And I can't even remember what year they did that. You know, obviously it was a while back, but, and he was talking, and you've seen screenshots of this, I'm sure, where there's a tennis match or a soccer match or Aussie rules or whatever. And, you know, you have the little widget, like on Fox or any channel that has sports, where it shows the score and the time remaining and all that. On the other corner, they have a little widget with live odds.
Live odds, yeah. It's unbelievable. Like that, it's so great.
Mind-boggling if that's a thing, but fuck it, why not? I love that.
Oh, dude, can you imagine that? On an NFL broadcast? NFL? Yes,
yeah. That would be Here's so the live cool. total. The live total's in the top corner the whole time.
Yes, that's right. Oh man, and just the broadcast in general, providing news and information related to the gambling aspects of it. I mean, you know, like this is okay. And so let's pivot right into the winners and losers, because all of this otherwise is speculation in terms of like how it will play out. But like,
I love some wild speculation though.
Yeah. Well, my wild speculation is that there will be a rocky. I guess, yeah. Well, okay, in your mind, you know, let's save our wild predictions for the very end. I wanted to pivot into winners and losers, and the winners kind of being the TV companies themselves, cable companies, companies like ESPN, people who are, you know, producing sports media right now. Like, in my opinion, at least, they are suffering substantially from just loss of consumers, right? There is such a diversity of entertainment options out there now. Social media has sliced away what otherwise would be people kind of giving their attention to the likes of ESPN just because they had nothing better to do. And what you've ended up with, at least, is kind of micro specialization in all these different areas. And at least, you know, the future of ESPN, if I had to place like an estimate, it would be like, look, like this will eventually just serve people who are gambling on sports. Like that's eventually where this will go, because they're, you know, just sort of the casual sports fan has been kind of split so many ways now that they don't care about ESPN and watching ESPN 24/7 anymore. The only people that are watching it are people who want news and updates to help handicapping. That's kind of the future of what I see there. And granted,
talk about ESPN from, like, gosh, I mean, you're a lot older than me. Not a lot older. Talk about the difference between how you viewed ESPN when you were like 10 or 12, when you first, whenever you first really started getting into spectator sports a little more, you know, early teens to now.
Absolutely. Because
I, when you were talking, that's all I could think of. Like, I couldn't wait to watch SportsCenter in the morning.
Of course. I didn't have access to a newspaper. Right. I didn't have access to a newspaper. I didn't get to understand live in real time anything that was going on in the West Coast or the Central Coast. All I got was local news would cover what happened to your local team. And then, you know, you would hear at school maybe or talk to your friends maybe about big sporting events just because there was buzz about it. You know, without ESPN, you were really, really cut off from anything involving the sports world. And then ESPN rolls in, and the kind of the sports center connected you, like, primally to the best parts of the sport itself. And you weren't wanting for information on what happened. And it basically turned you into a sports fan if you had any affinity for it in the first place. And I think all of that has changed because of the distribution of news and information. They're obviously dealing with the repercussions of people cutting cords, which, you know, doesn't have much to do with ESPN singularly, but has much more to do with just the way people consume media now. It's kind of resulting in this sort of...
I'd watch ESPN for a long time just to... Like, I could watch it for 10, 15 minutes just waiting for a score to come along at the bottom.
Oh, absolutely. I definitely remember...
Score. I'd be watching whatever was on it when they got that bottom line. I didn't matter what was on it because that's how you got a live score back then. I mean,
that's right.
I
remember sitting through full episodes of SportsCenter, getting to the end, and they go back and they start over again and being like, that's it. You know, like... sad, you know, and it's like, I guess I've seen it all now, and then you got to move on and do something else, or you just leave it on in background and do something else. But anyway, like, you know, that my guess, if I had to predict the future, would be that ESPN eventually becomes sort of the sole product for, like, micro specializing in providing you with sport that you love, a team that you love, or, you know, sports as a whole if you are handicapping. That's kind of my guess. Do you think I'm wrong?
I mean, no, they already have ESPN Chalk. They've already got it started on that. I mean, it's a pretty small part of what they do. And as far as you were talking, you know, how ESPN has changed for me too. I don't know that I watch ESPN outside of live sports.
No, not the same.
If I'm watching ESPN, it's probably because there's live sports on and it's not streamed somewhere else, or I'm at a bar and that's what's on. Like, I don't watch SportsCenter. I will sometimes watch Van Pelt. Just, I like him. Watch the 30s, but it's usually I'm watching them DVR'd or they're already on some streaming platform. I was thinking, like, when I first discovered, you know, I liked sports a lot, and I discovered ESPN. I would be I was going to, like, before school, like a child care thing before school. I must have been like 9 or 10, and I would, like, just steal the TV from the little kids, whatever they were watching. They weren't going to watch that anymore because there was a sports center on it, whatever it was, like 7 in the morning before school started. Like, every morning, that's what I did. They, like, the kids saw me coming in, and they knew that I was slightly bigger than them, and I was going to watch SportsCenter. Like, that was like my morning routine. I mean, you're talking way back when. You remember the brown, like the light brown?
Movie? Oh yes,
I can still play, like, I can picture what it was like when I was watching it at that time in my life. Was super important to me, and now I can't remember the last time I watched the SportsCenter. Yeah, like they do need to give it. Like, I think it could be a huge boon to them. Like, if they start putting some money and resources into the ESPN Chalk or whatever they have going and expand that, I like listening to some of the podcasts they put out. I don't mind listening to some of the stuff with Bear and Stanford Steve, and you know, when they start talking about it, because it's silly how it's still kind of taboo or whatever.
I know.
It's just ridiculous how puritanical we are about this.
And it's so dumb.
So crazy liberal about certain other things. Like it's odd. Like in England or Europe in general, I mean, there's sports teams that have ads for sports books on their jerseys.
Of course. And,
I mean, just the wild difference between how we view sports gambling and how it is across the pond is just mind-boggling sometimes. Mind-baffling. Yeah. I like that one.
But yeah, like, and let's talk about this for a second, and let's talk about the integrity fee for a hot second. Because the losers potentially in the short term are the bettors themselves. The idea that there will be some integrity fee tacked on to the VIG will make it extraordinarily hard to be successful. My guess is that it will kind of keep the, you know, those of us who are doing most of our betting offshore, or those people who live on Las Vegas where they've already figured this out, they will likely kind of continue to use those outlets as opposed to whatever new pops up in terms of like corporate entry or like state run, state mandate, you know, state allowed kind of outlets, right? And oh, by the way, like it's always going to be easier to put a bet in on your mobile phone than it is going to be to go, you know, roll down to the local shop and slap down $20 to get a ticket, right? I mean, like that's always going to be the case. And the fact that there's an existing infrastructure for these offshore books, I think will kind of, I don't know, my action will stay there, I guess, at least until, you know, further notice. But you know, this integrity fee thing, it's fucking laughable, man. Like, now that people can bet on sports, the likelihood, you know, your sport is going to gain fans, going to gain viewership right there, right? Like, NBA, you want to cut in all this? Let it happen and sell more season passes, right? Like, that's fine. Like people will stream more NBA. I guarantee you they will. People, there will be an uptick just across, you know, over the top, you know, media subscriptions, things like that, will see an uptick because people will be more engaged with the sport because they'll have financial stake when they otherwise wouldn't, right? And
yeah,
so
put a little more time and money into that streaming product. Make that
absolutely,
you know,
make it
shine
awesome.
That up, get that looking great.
Yeah. Make
people,
it awesome.
People are going to want that. You know,
people
many times
are
I've thought
that.
About getting like streaming products or even like back in the day, you know, a cable package. I've been dangerously close to getting like the thing where I can watch all the soccer leagues from across everywhere.
Of course,
I've had some subscriptions where I can watch some soccer. You know, and there's a lot of pirated streams too. But you know, like
tennis
with the
TV
NBA,
is tennis TV is mandatory. Yeah,
there's not going to be. I don't know. If they need to do that, they need to crack down on pirated NBA streams. If that's even
sure.
a thing, I guess I've never had to. I don't even know because I've never had to like. Well, I really need to pirate some NBA. I can usually find the game if I really want to. So, but I mean, yeah, put money into that streaming product and embrace the betting, embrace that part of it. Maybe you know some of these leagues they have their own TV channel.
Yeah,
just like we talked about with ESPN, maybe putting more resources into the ESPN chalk and the gambling side. The NFL Network, I mean, get some handicappers on there, talk about it.
Seriously.
It's a thing. It's a thing now. Like you could, I would watch that show.
Seriously,
like, even if
I would too. Of course,
that weren't even that smart. I would probably watch that over some of the other, you know, the
dude.
You know,
what do we do?
Len Dawson of Football Life.
Dude, we spent 2 hours every week of football season making a podcast for this. like I will absolutely watch a show about the handicaps
every week. You put that on NFL Network, MLB Network, and have a midday show where they go through all the lines for baseball. I'd probably time to watch that.
Exactly.
If you could wake up
betting
Sunday
baseball,
morning and watch a handicapping baseball show.
Oh, of course.
On the MLB
Network.
I sit there and watch it for 2 hours.
Right, and this actually kind of goes back into your ESPN content that you were talking about before. Like, if it's not live sports, why would you watch watch it. Well, if it's content that'll help you handicap, now I'm interested. Okay? And if it's and you know, this is also because a lot of the time, like, okay, well, if they're not showing live sports, well, is there live sports on? Right? Like, if you're a degenerate to the level that I am, I suppose, like, you almost are, you know, you're probably looking for action on something that's on live. And if there's another outlet that you can watch it, you're going to watch it, right? So the only way you can really compete with that is providing that sort of information, the handicapping information. And you know, like, there's not a lot of good voices, really. There is a huge talent vacuum in this sort of thing. And I would say this knowing that, like, yeah, shows exist, ESPN Chalk exists, there's a burgeoning marketplace right now of people creating content for sports betting on the internet. It's always kind of been clouded in this taboo, like you said, and now that's been lifted, and so those people are definitely winners, right? There's no doubt about it. Those people are going to thrive on the fact that they have an established foothold in the marketplace, and now you have all of this new interest that's, you know, being driven by the fact that what was once perceived as wrong is now fine, and those people are going to do well, I suspect, at least in the short term. But that said, there's still a relatively limited number of voices that provide, like, information and useful material that I want to hear. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I guess I can't speak for you, but it sounds like I might be able to. I mean, how many times have you thought you stumbled upon a decent blog or a decent podcast that was going to talk a little about sports betting, and then it wasn't any good?
Yeah, a lot.
It was just, well, this isn't good content. This isn't the information I want. Like, so it is tough. I mean, there are some good ones. I don't know what the percentage. I have other interests too. If I listen to a podcast, there's other things I like to hear. There's some really good podcasts about all kinds of other things. But I do listen to quite a few that sports, and more specifically that delve into some sports gambling.
Yeah.
Like that's obviously an interest of ours.
Yes. It goes without saying. And if you're listening to this, I suspect you're probably in that category too. But yes, like, and you know, there will be, I think, probably, like, you know, a lot of people who come out of the woodwork who try to stake a flag and try to provide this content who suck at it. And there are a lot of people, and you know what, actually, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, but, like, it's pretty obvious to me, it's pretty obvious to tell when someone has skin in the game and when they don't. Do you agree with that? Like, it's pretty easy to suss out someone talking about gambling who either lightly bets or hasn't bet what they're talking about, or is just
full of shit.
Just full of shit, right? Like, it's pretty easy to suss that out. Would you agree?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like, when people are talking about prices, or they're talking about parlaying certain things that you cannot actually parlay together at a legitimate offshore or something like that. You know, like, when people are, they, you know, they're, people, oh, make,
it's,
mistakes.
It's some guy in, you know, like, South Carolina, and he's talking about, he's got these lines, and it's like, well, all these lines are from, like, Bet365.
Yeah,
you can get real fancy and get around it, but you are probably not betting on that book.
No, that's, you nailed it. Yeah, exactly. Like, and there are people who don't understand certain markets. They don't understand, you know, risk in general and things like that. Who, you know, and there are people who have been doing this a long time, and who are betting and do have skin in the game, and they still make mistakes like that. You can suss that stuff out pretty quickly. And my guess is that in the first wave of kind of, you know, media companies attempting to, you know, curate talent to cover this stuff, they're going to pull in a lot of people who suck at this, and they're going to be pretty easy to expose, which leads me to the other side of that coin, which is the touts and scammers, right? Like, the true people who are, like, they can talk the talk, they can walk the walk, they can, you know, they can full on, like, you know, fashion a 15 minutes, polished 15-minute segment talking about something, when in reality, like, you know, all they're there for is to put money in their own pocket by not by betting what they're talking about, but just by, you know, selling you information. And
yeah, it's not, I was thinking about, you know, touts today, and some of the best touts I know, they aren't great self-promoters.
It no, seems like
those
true.
Two things, like being a good bettor, a good tout, a good sports investment service, and being a, you know, not shameless, but let's just say shameless self-promoter, seems as those things are, they're, you know, like mutually exclusive. You don't see the overlap enough. Like, if you see a guy that's tweeting all day and, you know, here's my packages, and that's constantly what they're tweeting, are they really working that hard on handicapping, I guess?
Yeah, so
I know some, I talked to some touts. I interact with them.
I'm very, and yeah, I completely agree. I'm very, very friendly with people who sell picks for information. Yeah, hand up.
So yep. A lot of them who do really well, they don't, you know, they put it out once a week or twice a week, and like, here's what my package is, here's my record, you know, let's go if you want.
Right,
you know,
right.
These people that are 30, 40 times a day, you know, without going down this rabbit hole too far and, you know, telling people who they should buy from. But like, it just seems like the people that tweet all day long about their picks and we're going to destroy the book tonight, and you're going to, you know, bend over your bookie and all this. Like, it seems like those guys probably aren't that great. I don't know. You know, who knows? Because there's the things that track bets and all that, but some of that seems sketchy too. You just never know. It sucks that the only way to find out if a tout is good is to buy a package for a while.
Yeah, right.
Like that, you have to. The only way to really get his or her complete record, for the most part, and this isn't for everybody, but really the only way to get the actual record is to buy a subscription and actually track it yourself.
Yeah, and you know, I guess. Yeah, that's right. It's the Wild West. It really is. It's fucking crazy. And like, there are the basics of all of this. Number one, if it's someone betting into an enormous market, like a big market, NFL market or something, right? They're probably not moving lines, regardless. And the question then becomes, okay, well. You know, are they, you know, betting these picks themselves? Like, okay, well, why are you selling? You know, like that. There are kind of certain markets and certain places where you know this. I think the math all does work out, and it's fine. And then there's other ones where, you know, okay, well, if you're betting in a particularly small market, the minute you get your action down, the lines, you know, those lines are unavailable, and so. You know, how do you
even in bigger sports and prop bets or stuff like that?
The smaller the market,
those
things
swing like crazy, or anything like that, where you're betting, even like derivatives, those are going to move faster. And that's the tough part about. And I sympathize because I do know a couple handfuls of touts that I know for a fact. Like, I trust these guys. Like, they seem like upright citizens and all that jazz, and it's tough to get your clients on the same number you can get, because for most of these guys, it's what they're doing for a living is betting, and then, you know, as usually a side income, selling some of their picks. And those guys are all day long at their computer, their terminal, at the book, whatever, and they're absolutely hammering that number when it gets opened or when they want it. When it gets the number that they want, and it's tough. And that's the tough part for some of them too, because then they get their ass chewed. Well, how'd you get -130 on this?
It's it moved in the time it took you to hit send on the email. Right? Yeah.
Well, some of these people that are betting on locals, they aren't going to throw the same number out for everybody, and that's rough. I guess we're really going down this rabbit hole, aren't we?
Nah. No, we can skip it. I don't really have a ton of nuanced thoughts on this, and there's a lot of people.
There's a lot of people
in the gambling Twitter space who understand this stuff and have explained this stuff better. So I don't really think we need to go there. But
I think the main point is, if you're a scamming tout, This is Christmas.
Yes, that's a good point. I will still contend that there are people out there, and there are people that we have curated friendships with who are advantage bettors, and they sell picks, and I have no problem with that. And there are lots of ways to kind of categorize the scams that are out there, and there are a lot of those scams. I mean, I think the easiest one to pick on is probably Vegas Dave. That is just full on nonsense. Who's the other guy? The guy from New York back in the day who had the 1-900 call line.
Stu or don't pick on Stu?
Oh yeah, Stu. Well, yeah. I mean, they are all marketing, because all they want is your attention, and they want you to hit your, you think you know what you're doing, you're betting your picks, you go on a little bit of a losing streak, and you're like, fuck it, I need like the good information, and for all you know, they're selling both sides of every game so that they can get half the people to come back. Like, that stuff absolutely happens. And so it's those types of people who will have a heyday in the early years of kind of legal proliferated sports betting in the U.S. And by all means, like, if you're someone who's new to this and you're listening to this podcast, you have questions about this sort of stuff, I'm happy to kind of engage in additional conversations. And you know, the messages are always open, and I try to get back to everyone. So by all means, hit us up. That's for sure a short-term winner. Can you think of any other like obvious winners and losers here?
Like you said, I think the sports leagues are winners, but maybe they don't know it yet. They're winners if they can take this and run the right direction. If they go the wrong direction and just worry about the easy dollar, the short-term integrity fee horse shit. And if they just, if they go the right way and they grab a hold of this and say, you know, we're all right with you betting on our sports, and we're going to put out content, or, you know, we're going to embrace it. I think it'll be better. It'll be better long term. But
you know what? I'm going to qualify.
I don't see that happening.
I'm gonna come out with a relatively hot take. I'm not sure you've heard this anywhere else. Because there was a lot of opinions flashed around today. A lot of people with various celebrating or poo-pooing this, blah, blah, blah. This is a hot take. A winner in this long term is going to be the integrity of sports. And the reason I say that is because once sports leagues have bona fide, bona fide relationships with the corporate books who will be the winners in this space, it will be easy to suss out fraud. It will be easy to suss out people who are trying to scam the system. Like, if you think that books are fine with taking money on both sides, you know, taking equal action on both sides, whatever, if someone is beating them long term, they care. They really care. And they are going to suss out why. And if it's for reasons like the referee is doing certain things to influence certain outcomes, and people are beating the books long term doing it that way, they will figure it out. And if you have they'll have the commissioner on the phone, or they'll have like weekly meetings, or with weekly meetings with high people in some of these leagues, and they will say, here are the unusual betting patterns we are noticing. We are noticing they are closely affiliated with these refs in these games, they are closely affiliated with these players at these tournaments. Like, it will work itself out if they have, if they build, what's the symbiotic relationships with the sports, exactly, the corporate sports books.
And just like we talked about with the tennis, like, and it's not as simple as we made it sound, it's like, oh, a whole bunch of people bet on an underdog that won. That's crazy. And it looked a little sketchy. Like, I'm sure there's some pretty fancy ass computers that are watching betting patterns and where the bets are coming from. You know, you can track the ISPs of everybody and say, you know, like, well, you know, with tennis, like if you're getting a shitload of bets from Russia and yeah, it's a Russian player and it's a Russian, you know, and they're all betting against the Russian. Like, I don't remember if this happened with the one last year. If a lot of them were coming from Eastern Europe, Dolgo.
I think they were.
I don't know if all the bets were coming from there, but you know, if it sees stuff like that, just unusual betting patterns, because they'll know what the. I would assume most books will kind of have a good idea where the money's going to come in before it even does, and I mean that's just part of setting the odds and being a risk assessment manager.
If things are
not going how they think, and the results are very bad for them, they're going to take some time and look into it. So I think your hot take might stick.
Right, and like without a doubt, like as that symbiotic relationship grows, if they are transparent with the betting community about what is happening, when they catch fraud, when they catch, you know, instead of like trying to sweep it under the rug and pretend like this never happens, if they are transparent about it, they will get goodwill in the long term, and it will absolutely help with both the actual integrity of the sport and the perceived integrity with the betting public, in my opinion. So please, I really hope they do that.
They don't want to lose like that. You know, the books will lose from time to time, but they don't want to lose like that. And the leagues don't want the black eye of having some sort of something, you know, constantly going on. If they can, it's better. No, this might happen. It probably will happen at some point, but it looks better for a league to catch it and say, hey, we caught this, and now we know better.
Absolutely.
Everybody knows that it goes on and nobody talks about it. That's a horrible look for the league, and obviously the books won't put up with that shit.
Yeah, right. And, oh, by the way, guess what one of the backwards conclusions from, like, the $20 million study on tennis came up with? Like, oh, you need to draw a clear line in the sand between betting shops and advertising at the sports venue. Like, wait, wait a second. There's almost no one that we can get to advertise for like a third tier tennis tournament. Now you're saying we should specifically cut ties with the books for some reason? Like, I would go hard the other direction. Like, you need to make the relationship as strong as possible and get the money going both ways as efficiently as possible. And, you know, here they are trying to, and oh, by the way, that whole report, all it really served to do was, like, throw fuel on the fire for people who are screaming, like, oh, everything's fixed, right? Like, it did nothing else to communicate to the public. Like, it gave no confidence that they had any idea about what they were doing or how they would fix it. It basically undermined the tennis integrity unit, in my opinion. Like, it was such a joke.
There's a lot of people, I just thought of an unintended consequence of this. There's a lot of people I don't like on Twitter. Not specific people, I'm saying, but like, maybe it's even somebody I like, somebody I get
What
along
Twitter
with.
Are you on? You know what I mean? I like everyone on Twitter. Are you kidding?
I know, but I guess I'm not talking specific accounts. I'm saying, you know, that guy or whatever.
Sure,
and
sure.
It's the guy that loses a bet and then has a 6 to 10 tweet thread about how it was fixed and how the ref, and granted, there is bad reffing. You can complain about, you know, that wasn't great reffing at the end, but the people that just, that's fixed, the refs were bought and all that. And like, I just think you're mad that you lost your bet and you're being pretty annoying. Like, I hate that. I hate when people go down that road, and I think that might get worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe, hopefully it doesn't. God, that sucks. It's like, you lost. It doesn't matter how you lost. It sucks. Like, I don't like to lose.
No, no one does. So the last point I wanted to bring up here, and this was a great one that I retweeted. You probably saw this. This was from Rufus Peabody. He had been asked, like, seems like a great time to start a business adjacent to the actual betting. What's a good idea? And he was came back with something unexpected I hadn't really heard or thought about, but it is absolutely brilliant. There needs to be some sort of watchdog organization that's nonprofit and takes no money from gambling-related companies. And this is something that would be good for the industry. Yeah, that if this doesn't actually manifest, Or, you know, I guess I would be a little surprised. Like, there's an opportunity here to, you know, if you care about this stuff, if you care about, like, this as, like, an, like a, you know, if you, this is a hobby that you like and you want to see it, like, you know, relatively well cared for, like, this doesn't, right, if you don't want to see all, yeah, right, exactly, like when they, right, like when they took Prohibition away, like they were careful in Napa Valley to make sure that like families who really were like serious about trying to grow grapes that would, you know, make really great wine, make sure that they had opportunities to kind of buy the, you know, buy the best areas, and rather than just like, okay, well, we're just going to mass grow grapes, whatever grows fastest, we want to pump out wine because like it's legal now and we can make money. Right, like they were like they had kind of set up a way to, you know, make the most
That's
of the opportunity.
Good,
it would be really, really great if something like this came around. And oh, by the way, like if you have, you know, if you care about this sort of thing and you want to talk about it more, by all means, get in contact with me, because I would be an advocate for this stuff too, because I love doing this as a hobby, and I, you know, it would absolutely help kind of, you know, keep the negative unintended consequences of this removal of Prohibition. It would keep them in check a bit, and it would just be great for like sort of the long-term health of everything that's going on in the betting space. So it would be cool, like just something that, you know, kind of kept track of the scams and the frauds, and kind of helped elevate the overall impression that this is on the up and up. Stock market went through something
were,
like this.
Were
you know?
Excited today? Were you excited about this?
I was.
I'm just thinking. I'm like, I was, but it wasn't like you were comparing it to Prohibition. I can't imagine. I guess maybe those people, you know, everybody was drinking bathtub gin anyway. But it's like if I want to bet on something, I have been for years.
Yeah.
Anything right. I want to bet on, I'm betting on for the most part. It's very tough to find something that I want to bet that I can't find a line on one of our offshores or local around here.
Yeah. No, like, does this change my day-to-day?
No, I'm excited for the part you're excited about. Like, hopefully, and more, it was more of our hope than the possible actual reality. Who knows how things would go. But I guess the more I talked with people today and the more we talked it out, I guess I'm excited for the possible, you know, proliferation of better sports gambling media.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm excited about.
Absolutely.
I'm already betting. I'm
absolutely
fine.
I turned to like, Twitter
I'm not going to go to one of these brick and mortar shops. I probably won't for a long time. I go to them in Vegas just because it's fun when you're out there to hold
and
the
you
ticket.
You have a ticket in your hands.
I can be in a sports book in Vegas and I'll still be betting on five dimes. If the odds are better, why not? You know,
absolutely without a doubt.
If we end up in Minnesota, I'll go up there with, you know, some buddies, want to do a fun weekend and we go to the sports book and bet a bunch of games. Like, that will be fun, but like this isn't something I need, or a lot of people, you know, maybe people in New York.
Yeah, right. And I guess like, I definitely see the potential for the product to be more fun, and you know, it will be more fun for me if there's more focus on gambling, right? They, like as it is now, like when a game is completely out of reach for the winner and loser, but the total is on the number, and it's coming down to, you know, what the B squad is, you know, making or missing in the final 2 minutes, and you have like a swing, you know, of the total, like that is fascinating to me. And I love like rushing to Twitter and kind of experiencing that with other people that I know that bet the total, right? Like that's huge,
well,
but it's never mentioned.
It's
on
say, bad beats are fun sometimes.
Yeah,
if you're
right,
not involved
yeah.
and nobody,
you're not
nobody
involved,
you like was involved, or maybe you know somebody that was on, it's not a bad beat for everybody. Like, there's people on the other side of that. Like, bad beats are, I shouldn't say fun. They are super entertaining on Twitter.
That's
and
great.
It's like how I said, you know, if I go out to Vegas, I'm going to spend a lot of time in a sports book. I enjoy that quite a bit. And watching that shit in a sports book is fascinating, too. Like, you can be sitting there for a while and have no idea what people are betting on. And then once you get down to it, it's painfully obvious what everybody around you has bet on.
Absolutely.
Whether, you know, they're living and dying on anything, or the guy that's pissing and moaning about both teams scoring, you know what he's doing. So that is a lot of fun watching. Just watching people's emotions in the sports book is ripping up their tickets.
This definitely takes away some of the cachet, though, of being a degenerate at a party and no one else really gives a shit about the outcome, and you're sitting there like, you know, super excited or super crushed, and everyone's like, "What's going on with you?" And you're like, "Oh, well, I had a bet on that." And now it'll be everyone that bet on that. So you lose a little bit of that outlaw.
I think we're going to still be that guy.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think there's going to be people that are betting tennis daily.
Yeah,
so I think you and I will probably still remain the degenerates at the party.
I had some pretty funny experiences this weekend. I went to one of my oldest college friend's wedding, and there was basically a reunion of our college friends after like 15 years. And
this is the second wedding?
No, first wedding. This career. Is a career woman. Career woman. It's all good.
Oh, okay.
Very, very accomplished career woman. I had the Madrid Open.
I'm just calling out people I don't know here.
I had the Madrid Open streaming on my iPad like the whole weekend. And people were like, "Oh, is it the French Open?" I was like, "No, it's Madrid Open." And they were like, "Oh, well, what do you give a shit about that?" And I was like, "Well, I kind of have a lot of money riding on this tennis match here." Trying to explain to them like tennis handicapping. Oh, it was a trip. People got a kick out of it, so that was fun. Anyway, should we wrap this up?
Yeah, I think that's all I have to say. I mean, okay. A lot of it's wait and see. It'll be a very interesting time coming here in the next.
It will be.
Even in the next few weeks, seeing how the first few books that are actually going to open out in New Jersey, there's construction, I guess. There's a couple that are ready to rock. It'll be really cool to see how that all goes.
What is your long term prediction? 2020, is the 2020 Super Bowl going to be, I think I got this right, Super Bowl 55 presented by Unibet?
I think that's a little ahead of schedule.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that might be a ways off, but no, it'll be very, very interesting to see how quickly states fall in line.
I like it. Naming rights on the new Vegas. The bet, yeah, you're gonna go watch the, you're gonna watch the Vegas. Yeah, the Vegas Raiders at Bet365 Stadium.
They wouldn't have a problem with that. That'd be fun. Yeah. And there are, I mean, I don't know how much soccer you watch, but man, you see that a lot in the European soccer, even, you know, South American soccer, where the ads that they have on those barriers around the pitch, just all of them are all betting stuff. It's almost all betting stuff. Beer, cars, and betting stuff.
Oh, of course. I love it. All right. Well, great pod. Good talk. I look forward to seeing what happens in the space, and we'll give you unaffiliated commentary, as always, on this type of content. And
hit us up on Twitter. Tell us how wrong we are.
I'd love to. Yeah.
Just all the stuff I read today. There was a lot of hot takes, and some of them were really stupid in my mind. But there was a lot of things I read today, and it wasn't from just the big writers and, you know, people with check marks. I saw a lot of comments below big writers and check marks that kind of had me scratching my head and maybe giving things a second thought. There's a lot of moving parts here, and I saw a lot of things today on Twitter that really had me wondering how this will all go, because there's a lot of theories, and I saw a lot of them that held some water.
You know, it's going to make handicapping NFL a little harder, probably, because the market's going to be different. So we'll have to keep that in mind. You know, it's the market changed, I think, when kind of information distribution on like betting percentages and things like that became more widely available. I think it's going to change again now that you have an entirely new class of inexperienced people entering the marketplace.
You're the dog.
Yeah.
We'll revisit this in January, and then we can go back to that exact comment I just made when dogs win at like 66%. And we can spend all this time handicapping all season. We should just blindly bet every dog every week.
Bet the dog, bet the under. Yeah. Yep. Primetime unders are going to be big. Right. Primetime dogs are going to be big. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be glorious, man. It's going to be glorious. All right, man. Well, have a wonderful week, and we'll try to reconnect and talk a little football this week. How's that sound?
I think that's an excellent idea. Season's right around the corner.
All right. Take it easy, Andy.